Chapter 8. But it seemed to Temeraire that Jack Telly had indeed cursed them, for all their luck had run away. They searched and searched, and were always, it seemed, a little too late, or had gone a little too far. Meanwhile the trail crept onward beneath them at the snail's pace of foot speed, offering only the most tantalizing bits of encouragement. Today a scrap of porcelain, tomorrow another nest for the egg. Temeraire passed an uneasy night and woke even more uneasy. He raised his head in the first moments before dawn, while everyone else yet slept, and watched the line of the horizon growing sharper where it met the sky. It seemed very far away. The forest had broken up at some time during their last night's flight, and there was nothing to conceal the hard edge of the world but a handful of brushy trees looking a little like broomsticks stuck into the earth upside down, and low hillocks. At first the dawn grey lingered, cast over all the ground, pale knotted clumps of grass and darker shrubs standing out against the dark earth. Then by degrees the blue washed over the vast bowl of sky in advance of the sun, and colour began to come back into the world, but colour terrible and strange. The sandy earth all beneath them was red as the exposed side of a freshly broken brick, as though someone had painted it. The grasses were hay yellow, as if dead. But all of them. There was not a single green blade anywhere. The stand of bushes along one side of their camp looked a little less unnatural, full of shining, dark green leaves, but they alone looked verdant, and the stand of trees where Temeraire had been looking at, between them and the horizon, were blackened as if by fire. The smoke stains were dark up and down the bark, but equally strange, they had fresh green leaves put out at their ends, despite the curled-up, charred scraps of the old ones clinging still to the lower branches. There were no clouds in the sky, no water on the ground, not a living thing stirred anywhere around. It was the queerest place Temeraire had ever seen. Even the Taklamakan, which had been empty and barren and cold and of no use to anyone, had not looked so very wrong. At the oases there had been poplar trees and proper grass, and where there was no water there were no plants growing, and the ground had not looked so peculiar at all.
"Lawrence," Temeraire said urgently, nudging him.
Lawrence was drowsing lightly against his forearm, sitting near the egg.
"Lawrence, perhaps you might wake up."
"Yes,"
Lawrence said, still asleep, and rubbed his hand over his face.
"I am not afraid myself, of course, but I should not like to alarm the men," Temeraire added. "And I am afraid we may have got into the underworld somehow. I cannot account for it otherwise."
"I beg your pardon,"
Lawrence said, opening his eyes and standing. And then he was silent.
"I am sorry we should have pressed on during the night," Temeraire said, "but perhaps it was Jack Telly's spirit."
"We are not in the underworld,"
Lawrence said, but the men, when they woke, were more of Temeraire's mind, until the meagre breakfast of biscuit had been shared out, and then one very stupid person said,
"I reckon there wouldn't be biscuit in the hot place. We'm in China, I expect, and whoever would want to come here, I don't know."
At once the convicts all agreed. They had certainly reached China. They were not moved from this ridiculous opinion either, even when Temeraire, exasperated, said,
"But this is not China at all. China is across the ocean from here, and it is a very splendid place, not like this at all. There are thousands and thousands of dragons there, all over."
"There you have it," O'Day said to the others with ghoulish relish. "A god-forsaken place. We will see a horde of them fly out of the west any morning now, coming to devour us, and then we will go down to old Nick's country in the end."
Temeraire put back his ruff in irritation.
"Some mineral in the soil gives it the colour, I imagine,"
Dorset said, scraping at the earth with the end of a stick and peering inquisitively at the still brighter dirt revealed below.
"We must backtrack in any case," Tharke said, shading his eyes with a hand. "We must have overshot the turning of their trail."
"I can't see they would come into this countryside," Granby agreed,
absently rubbing his arms as he looked around him yet again, as though he could not help it. Temeraire could see many of the other men doing so as well, and it made him look again also. It was indeed very odd to find oneself in the middle of this queer red landscape.
"It is a godforsaken country. I don't suppose anyone can live here comfortably. Shall we go back to that waterhole we saw last night? And we had better see the men all have a drink before they come over ugly on us."
But when they had flown on 3 miles, still the endless sweeping in either direction, and all the while their eyes on the ground, so the tiny distance took the better part of 2 hours, Tharke suddenly leaned forward on Iskierka's back, and Temeraire followed her to the ground. Tharke leapt down in 3 bounds from her back to the sands, and he stooped at a mounded heap of red sand exactly hollowed to that same eggshell curve, and beside it, stark and brilliantly reflecting in the sunlight, a white ochre handprint was marked freshly upon a jutting monolith of dark red stone.